Today. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER 107.3.
What have you always wondered about Sydney and the people who call it home? 2SER is Seeking Sydney. Head over to 2SER.com and ask the questions you want our team to investigate. While you're there, why not vote for whichever question you'd like answered? 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music.
To SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Hello, hello. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture right here on 2SER 107.3. My name is Sophie. Big thanks to Sean and the Nest from the Vultures Nest, talking all things current affairs this week. But, oh, this is the show where we talk about everything arts and culture, and we've got a massive show for you today. Next, for the month of March at the Australian Museum, Weave Festival, it's an inaugural festival that they're launching next month, which is all about Indigenous culture and Pacific Islander cultures. So we're going to be chatting with the Australian Museum about what's happening there. Also, Blake Howard will be coming in as usual for Gaggle of Gooks. And this week, some exciting news about Bond 25. Yes, they're up to 25 films in the Bond series. Who would have thunk it? And Collector Space Exhibition is happening where people are opening up their doors to, you know, private collections of art that you wouldn't see in the public domain. So it'll be very interesting to see what kind of artworks are going to come out of that. And Robbie James, the co-creator of Bedlam Cabaret, will be coming in to chat all things Bedlam Cabaret. But to kick things off, here's a tune now from Henry Wagons, who was speaking to my soul. This one is called Cold Burger, Cold Fries. Oh, what a brekkie.
I tripped over my shoes and fell into the couch. The refrigerator light nearly knocked me straight out. My stomach's in fits. I need to fill it. Damn it. My ice box is empty as my wallet. Cold burger, cold fries. Yes, it's all I deserve after what I did last night. This apocalypse, and in the papers in the corner, poking out a few chips. Well, I'm a dick for what I've done, and I hate to make you sad. Choose a shoulder to cry on, and I was drink feasting mad. Cold
Cultures is celebrating its 10th year as Australia's largest African festival on Saturday, March 10 at Wyatt Park, Lidcombe. Immerse yourself in the vibrant culture, music and delicious food from these vibrant countries. Enjoy two stages of live dance and music, shop the African marketplace, sign up to a style workshop or try some of the 14 different cuisines in the Nile food court, plus much more. Visit africultures.com.au for more information. 2SER is a proud media partner of Africultures Festival.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture with me, Sophie.
Let's enjoy new stuff, old stuff, a real variety.
My pleasure.
And yay!
2SER 107.3.
Celebrating the strength and diversity of First Nations dance, art, storytelling and song, WEAVE is the Australian Museum's inaugural month-long festival of Aboriginal and Pacific cultures, featuring a stacked program that aims to weave together historical and new knowledge. Joining us on the line to tell you more is Whale One woman and First Nations creative producer of the Australian Museum, Laura McBride. Hello, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Now, this is a month-long festival, a huge project. How did it all come about?
Historically, Western organisations have always told Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander narratives within museums. And research shows that the way in which Aboriginal people and Pacific people are exhibited within museums directly affects our social agencies. So how we're portrayed within the museum is how people perceive us, and it's not necessarily a true portrayal. So Aboriginal communities and Pacific communities have always wanted more rights and involvement in how they're represented within museums, and that's how WEAVE came about. It's a month-long festival where communities can tell their own stories based on our collections, and we provide the spaces and help facilitate those stories to the general public.
Speaking of all those collections that you already had in the museum, is this kind of a way of taking back those stories and showing the world what they mean to you personally?
Yes, in a way. The problem is they don't really, you know, one of the most important parts of an object is actually the intangible heritage around the object. For many Aboriginal communities, a boomerang is a boomerang because it's used, it's sung, its story has been told. As soon as a museum takes it and puts it on the shelf, it's more just a stick on a shelf. It's no longer a boomerang without its story. And what Aboriginal and Pacific communities are doing is bringing those stories, that intangible heritage, back to the objects and bringing them alive again. It's the true story of those objects. They have very little information, actually, a lot of the objects at the museum. Those stories weren't necessarily of interest to the people who were collecting them at the time. The object itself was.
Mm. Now, it's called WEAVE, this festival, so why did you choose that in particular as a title?
The Aboriginal and Pacific staff, along with several different community members who were consulted on this project, decided to use WEAVE because it's a cultural practice shared by both First Nations and Pacific cultures. So many groups have weaving in common, but WEAVE is also a metaphor. It's a metaphor for how we can weave together our knowledges and experiences with those of the visitor so that we can build a better shared future.
Yeah. As you mentioned, weaving plays a major part in this festival. Can you tell us a bit more of how it will play a part in that way, and especially the centrepiece, Gaddy?
So as part of WEAVE, we are doing a temporary exhibition. It's called Gaddy. It's the original name of Sydney City site, and the museum is just showcasing that as a core component of weave to take it back to the local people first. So this year we're focusing on Sydney as part of GADDI Aboriginal community members, including master weavers and elders, will be constructing a sculptural piece dedicated to Sydney's fisherwomen called Marn. On Fridays and Saturdays from 10 till 1, visitors can come to GADDI and witness the elders working on that sculptural piece. On Monday through Thursday, visitors can contribute to the sculptural piece themselves by weaving a beautiful fish hook with Aboriginal staff.
Wow. So this is going to be a creation that will be going throughout the month of the festival.
Yes. We've actually started building Marn early this year, actually probably late last year, in the community. It's being brought into the museum to share with visitors across March and likely across a few other months, so that museum visitors can contribute to and learn about Sydney's fisherwomen. And pieces will go back into the community where different community groups and individuals will work on it. And then later this year, it'll be installed as our centrepiece in the permanent Aboriginal galleries. So as soon as you walk into our galleries now, you'll see a Sydney story first, which is something that museums wanted to do for quite some time.
Amazing. Now, your elders and master weavers, they're also going to be creating Nawis or canoes. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so the sculpture is four tied bark canoes. That's the specific type of canoe that was used in this region. The design of the canoe was overseen by Uncle Steve Russell, who's been working with canoes around Sydney for quite some time now. And we have a frame, and so we're twining onto that frame with Lamandra. So we're using Lamandra, which is it's quite a common grass found around Sydney, the council's and parkland's favourite because of its resilience to pollution. So we're very lucky that it's planted everywhere and we're able to source it quite easily to build these beautiful Nawis, these beautiful canoes.
Fantastic. Now, aside from weaving, you're also going to have heaps of video installations and screenings and VR experiences. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, we're hosting the world premiere of Kariburi, which is really, really exciting. It's a new virtual reality documentary that showcases Aboriginal song and dance on country. It's narrated by David Golpalil and was shot in some of the land's most stunning locations, from the Central Desert to Byron Bay. So you can come into the museum, sit in our theatre, and for 14 minutes move all around Australia and see Aboriginal people on country performing their songs and their dances and maintaining their culture. Following that, people are welcome to come out and do a self-guided tour of the Indigenous galleries and look at some of those beautiful objects that they may have seen in the VR.
Amazing. As this is also a celebration of Pacific cultures, you also have a screening of Tuvalu. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So the Tuvalu video installation is by the acclaimed Pacific artist Angela Tiatia, and it reveals the impact of climate change and rising tides on the Polynesian island nation of Tuvalu. The Pacific nations are every day watching climate change in action. They can see the waters rising, and so for them, climate change isn't something that they have to think about in the future. They really need the world to start listening now. And this is a very beautiful video installation that hopefully will connect with visitors so that everybody can start taking climate change a little bit more seriously and realise that we all really do need to act now.
I mean, you also have like more environmental activism in that. You've got a screening of Connection to Country as well, which is about mining. Can you expand on that a little bit as well?
So we're showing Connection to Country as part of Burrabugu, which is our final culture up late. And that looks at Indigenous perspectives on the environment. We believe that there is a social and emotional disconnect between mainstream culture and the environment, and we're trying to encourage social and emotional relationships between humans and their environments, so that they start to think about it a little bit more, take care of it a little bit more. It's a major issue for both Pacific communities and Aboriginal communities that we start to treat the environment with a little bit more respect, and we need to start looking at things a little bit differently. Aboriginal Australians have been through major climate change with the last ice age. They've witnessed it and they survived it, you know. So I think there's a lot of skills, a lot of knowledge to be learned from those communities who lived in harmony with the environment and lived for many, many thousands of years doing so.
Mm. I mean, it's quite a contentious topic, especially with mining and with the Darney mine that's happening at the moment. Will this be commenting on that at all as well?
The Indigenous staff and the contractors we hire on the night will be talking about elements of mining and stakeholders, but the Australian Museum might not necessarily take that stand themselves. But it's very important that the Pacific communities and Aboriginal communities have a platform from where they can voice their opinions on the matter, and the Australian Museum is providing that platform.
Brilliant. Now, it's not all fun just for the adults. The children can also get involved. So can you tell us a bit more about the children's program that you have there?
Yeah, so we have Tiny Tots and Mini Explorers, which is our under-fives program that's been running for many, many years, is now being run by Aboriginal educators. And so it just brings elements of culture and different ways of viewing the land. So it's still a very immersive and educational program. There's a lot of science being taught, but they also get to experience Aboriginal culture and the way Aboriginal people experience science, experience land, experience all those different elements. It's a very exciting program and it's looking quite well, so it looks like people really want to be involved.
Brilliant. Well, we can't wait to see all the action go down for the month of March. But Laura, thank you so much for joining us here on 2SER today.
Thank you very much.
Laura McBride there, the creative producer of the Australian Museum. Weave is happening throughout the month of March at the museum, so we'll put all the details up along this podcast and when you can check things out. Going to jump into some music now before we head to Blake Howard for a gaggle of geeks. This one's from the Coneheads. It's called Way Things Am.
Sydney's premier comedy night is here, and it's right in the heart of Newtown. Wayward's Comedy at the Bank showcases a range of local legends every Wednesday night, including Mike Goldstein, Cassie Workman, Eric Hutton, Neil Kolhatka, and plenty more during February. Just $10 online or on the door. For full lineups and more info, head to bankhotel.com.au. The Bank Hotel, proudly sponsoring 2SER 107.3.
You're on So Hot right now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. Now, it's time for your pop culture fix.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard?
And Sophie Lai.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Sov. Good morning, geeks. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Every week we talk about all things that are good and geeky.
Your weekly geekily.
Is that going to be our tagline from now on?
Probably. I think I just made it up. I was thinking about that.
It only took, like, what, 3 years? Your weekly geekily.
Your weekly geekily. Yeah, we found it. It's good. Guys, if you want more of this, because, you know, we're only going to talk for about 10 minutes right now on your lovely Saturday morning. Mm. But if you want more of this, don't forget that there is a supersized Gaggle of Geeks 2SER podcast on iTunes right now with Soph and I. And we just go off into many more tangents than you're going to hear right now.
So many tangents.
And it gets weird.
Where? I don't know how it would happen. That was one weird.
There was a weird week. And then there was one last week where you went super cray-cray on a final cutscene of the first news story that we're going to talk about.
Which is Black Panther, because we never have enough time to talk about Black Panther.
Look, guys, it's the movie that the entire world is talking about, Black Panther. Predictions were it was going to make $120 million because, look, we know it's good. And hopefully if you are listening, you've got a chance to see it. It's made a stack of money in Oz. But, you know, with these things, they've always got to make money, right? And that's the big important thing.
Yes. So... it predicted 120 for opening weekend. It actually made 170 in pre-sales. So before it even came out.
People had, you know, on all your event cinemas and all your equivalents, right? Dendy's, and you buy tickets online. 170 million in pre-sales before the movie even opened. 210
million.
242
million.
242. Wow, 242 in its opening 4 days in the United States.
Yeah.
And for the week... internationally, Soph?
427 million.
Just a little away from half a billion dollars.
Half?
Half. I want half. Oh, my God. Half a billion dollars. That is freaking awesome.
It's redonkulous.
Yeah, it's great.
This is the power of this film. It is like a week.
It's catching, like,
1 week, and it's already outdone... it's just shy of, like, performing as well as Star Wars, pretty much.
Yeah, Star Wars The Force Awakens is one of the biggest openings ever domestically in the United States. And look, this is, you know, there are some movies that have got staying power. And what's amazing about Black Panther is that it's absolutely smashing it. The conversation that it's kicking off all around the globe is amazing. You can't hit a publication without a Black Panther story. Almost any culture publication you're going to be reading, people are going to be looking for the story, looking for the angle to talk about it. And you know, it's kind of weird as to say, it's like, I'm not sick of it.
Like with Wonder Woman, which, like, you know, like Black Panther had something to say. It just kept making buck every week, and it was just steady growth. Not going down, and which was why I was in the cinemas for so long, and why the conversation about the importance of Wonder Woman was there for so long.
And it's kind of crazy because it's the, you know, and to get, like, a little bit behind the curtain for movie distribution, it's like, it's kind of an off week. Like, big movies, you know, Deadpool a couple of years ago opened very strong on Valentine's Day, you know, and hilariously so. But
yeah, because that was marketed as a Valentine's film.
Yeah, I love it. It was brilliantly marketed as a Valentine's film. But Valentine's Day is not a traditional time where, like, you make a stack of money.
Not for genre movies.
Not genre movies.
Because they're the big summer blockbusters.
And so they want to open it in the United States when the maximum amount of kids are, you know, off on holidays and, you know, going to see movies pretty regularly and expanding the amount of time they can see it. So it's pretty incredible that this time of year, it's like, not only is it breaking records as far as, you know, domestic box office results in the States just at any time of the year, but it's making it now. So it's like the blockbuster time window that we used to have that would be like end of April to, you know, end of August is now spreading to be, no, blockbusters are going to be in every single month of the year, except for maybe January.
It's so bizarre. And it's funny because, like, you know, the big blockbuster time used to be December, like just after Christmas, because, you know, for us, Boxing Day releases, and that's when Star Wars came out.
Mm-hmm. December was Star Wars. Lord of the Rings in Australia in the Southern Hemisphere. They kind of changed the game with that in December.
Yeah, it was Star Wars in December.
Yeah.
But like now it's like no one touched December because that is back to Star Wars territory. Yeah. Like just there's no one wants to compete
now. No one wants
now.
December. So Marvel's like, Marvel's going to have every month soon. Marvel and Disney is going to have every single month.
Well, June is Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
And
Incredibles 2.
Incredibles 2.
Is July or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
And Han Solo movie is...
May.
Cool. Yeah. Let's get them all now. There you go. Sorted. Ant-Man and the Wasp, is that this year?
Yep.
Cool. That's November.
Yeah, that's November.
Cool.
So, you know,
yeah,
we're
6 months of the year. That's theirs. Moving on.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And then,
you like money? Yep.
Yep.
look, the...
And then Deadpool.
Yeah. Well, no, that's... Disney don't technically own Fox yet.
No, but in terms of the Fox releases, there's still a couple, which then will take out...
Yeah, they'll take...
out a couple other months of the year.
Well, they want two Marvel movies and two Star Wars movies a year, I think is what they're going for.
Two Star Wars movies?
They're going to get to two Star Wars. Yeah, because they're going to go anthology story and, like, canon story.
Yeah, but it was going, like, 1 year...
One to one.
And now they're doing... Two.
They're going to get there. They've got Rian Johnson doing a whole new trilogy. They've got the guys from Game of Thrones, maybe two, and Star Wars TV.
I'm going to pose you a question. Will you get Star Wars fatigue? Because you're knowing you, if people don't know Blake Howard, he does not like navel gazing, especially in Star Wars.
I have Star Wars fatigue now. I've got it. I've got it. I'm, you know, it's like that thing. Like I think you can have fatigue with it with any of those kind of movies. I think it's just about... If you can dilute it with other great stuff that is nowhere even near the genre or like big blockbuster popcorn, and you can have really cool indie stuff in between, I think it might save you. But if they're the only things, you know, we're weird, right? And the geeks who are listening to this, some of the geeks will go and see a movie a week, and that's a lot. If you see you in a movie every 2 weeks, that's 26 movies a year that you're seeing at the theater. That's a lot. That's not. And with all the popcorn and blockbusters, you're probably seeing 15 minimum, just minimum. So. You know, it's a lot of movies to see, and they're now coming on Netflix too, so you just have no respite, right?
No.
But look, speaking of movies, you know, small movies, independent flicks. James Bond 25 is the other big piece of news this week.
Yes.
Which is, you know, there was a little bit of talk earlier in the week, Chris Nolan saying, I'm not going to do a Bond, even though all the Chris Nolan fanboys, myself included, would be like, I'd love to see him do a Bond. But he was like, if you've seen my movies, you know that I've... love hashtag stolen liberally from many Bond movies. He goes, I don't think I could contribute anything different. The rad news this week, though, is that director, Oscar-winning director, that is, Danny Boyle has been tied to the James Bond franchise and is looking like a certainty to direct Bond 25.
Danny Boyle, Danny Craig.
Two Dannys.
Double Dannys.
Double Dannys. yeah, look, Danny Boyle, Slumdog Millionaire, Trainspotting, Trainspotting 2, Trance, 28 Days Later, Sunshine.
Yep.
Incredible filmmaker.
Yep.
Vibrant, colourful, great storyteller. And if you know, Danny Boyle's the kind of director, there's a few of them that you see his name on a movie and you're like, I'll see it. And... like up on Netflix right now is the Steve Jobs movie, which is again another one of his flicks, who is really underseen but is a terrific movie. He's just a great director. So he apparently pitched to Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson, who are the producers, the longtime producers of James Bond, a pitch back in 2012 when he walked the Queen, when Danny Craig walked the Queen as James Bond into the Olympics opening ceremony. So at that time, he had an idea, and apparently it's like a standalone James Bond film. And they've said, you know what, that sounds good. So John Hodge, the guy who wrote Trainspotting and a stack of other Danny Boyle flicks, is on board.
Does that mean more toilet toilet diving?
Okay, we're going to see James Bond do heroin. He's going to climb out of a toilet. He's going to fall into a shitter like in Slumdog Millionaire. He's going to have his memory broken into like in Trance. Look, we've got lots to look forward to.
Can't wait. What a plot line.
Oh, yeah. So,
but it's got a release date, so it's coming out in November 2019. So keep that in your diaries.
That's just a whip. Come on, guys. Get
I know.
That James Bond
it
out.
Is under 2 years. And those films... Lord
is that it. Under 2 years? I thought it was three. They pretty much aren't they 3, 3, 3?
Well, from close. Now.
From now,
from
yeah.
From now.
Yeah.
I mean from now. that's not a lot of time to shoot a ginormous action movie.
I think that keeps them about 3 years per Bond. But yeah, like Danny Craig's navel gazing and frustration about never wanting to play the character again, you know, was really driven out of bad press tour. So excited to see two Dannys. But you know, if it changes, there's some pretty rad other directors that could take the reins. But Danny Boyle, I'm not going to say no to.
No.
New.
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 Well, bloke, catch you next week for more Gaggling of Geek Sings, where we talk Red Sparrow, the Black Widow film that isn't Black Widow.
Yeah. Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow? Black Widow?
Black Widow? Red Sparrow?
I don't know.
It's like, okay, we need a colour and something that ends with O. Okay, cool. O-W. Okay, cool. Okay. Red Sparrow. Black Widow. Red Sparrow.
Yep. I am getting really confused now.
it's close enough. No, the Jennifer Lawrence spy film. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, it looks really...
Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm all about it.
Mm.
But yeah, we'll be chatting that and probably many other geek stories.
Yeah. But till then, catch us here every week on So Hot Right Now. Catch us on the podcast on
iTunes. To SCR's Gaggle of Geeks on iTunes.
We're there. And you can hear us ranting for an hour instead of this 10 minutes.
I know. Doesn't that sound thrilling? If you want to hear some greater weirdness, more tangents, and just more geek stories in your week, you can come onto our podcast, To SCR's Gaggle of Geeks. Rate, review, iTunes. We'll be there. But until next time, see you soon.
Bye, Blake.
Bye.
What Blake didn't mention is you can also read all his reviews on graffitiwithpunctuation.com. You are listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. And coming up, we're going to be chatting with people from the Collector Space exhibition, which shows off the private collections of Sydney's art influencers. And it's all happening as part of Art Month Sydney, which isn't far. It's in March. Just around the corner. But to get you there, here's one from Alan Smithy. This one's called The Streets.
Sleeping, your mind rests. I'm Lisa Rose, Festival Director for Queer Screen's Mardi Gras Film Festival. Today is a huge day at the festival with 10 film screenings and a meet and greet with Canadian actress who's a cult fan favourite of many young queer people. Don't miss Just Charlie, an award-winning drama about a young soccer star who risks losing the love of family and community to live as a girl. And The Cake Maker, which follows Thomas, a baker, as he is mourning the loss of his married lover. He travels to Israel to seek out the only person who can understand his pain, his lover's widow. All films and tickets at queerscreen.org.au.
You're listening to So Hot Now, your weekly dose of art and culture. Now, for all you art lovers out there, you'll finally be getting the chance to catch a peek inside the private art collections of some of Sydney's finest artists, curators and cultural leaders. The Collective Space exhibition will be taking up May Space as part of Art Month Sydney, and Artistic Director Kate Britton is on the line to tell you more about these exciting collections. Good morning, Kate.
Hi there, Sophie. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Yeah.
Excellent.
Quite busy.
I can imagine. So it's such a rare treat for these collectors to be showcasing their private art collections. How many are you wrangling, pretty much?
Well, we've got five collectors. So we've got Tony Albert, Tess Ellis, Daniel Moody Cunningham, Abdul Abdallah, and Emma Price. So it's a bit of a mix of artists, curators, producers, and some people who sort of cross all those boundaries.
Mm. And why these five people in particular?
I think, what I was really interested in exploring, is, I love this idea of building an art collection from a kind of community that you're part of. Mm. And I think that these are, they're five people that I've always really admired within the kind of Sydney art scene. I think they're people I know that have really lasting relationships with other artists, in the case of the artists, and with the artists that they work with, in the case of the curators. And the people that I've always looked up to in that sense, that I think that they really embed themselves and give a lot into that kind of scene. And so I think their collections reflect the relationships and these really sort of strong ties that they have to that community.
Yeah. What are some of your favourite stories about these kind of relationships you were just discussing?
Sure. Well, gosh, I don't know where to start. But Tony Albert's collection is a great example, I think, where some of the works that I'm showing have come out of a project that he was really involved in working in a prison up in Alice. And so they're sort of not necessarily artist names that everyone will know, but It's these amazing birds that are created out of old leather gloves and things. So I guess just whatever materials they could get their hands on. And I think to sort of get insight into, the fact that Tony kind of spends a lot of his time and gives back so much into the community and then, brings these works out and, was really eager to kind of have them out on public display and to showcase that sort of project that he's involved in is fantastic. And a lot of the works that he has have come out of kind of projects that he's worked on in community and with communities. Mm. A lot of Tess Ellis's works that I'm showing are prints from Cicada Press, which she's really, really involved in, which is at UNSW Art and Design. It's a printmaking workshop and a printmaking facility there. So, she's sort of in many cases been really active in kind of guiding and working with the artists to create the actual work. So she has that sort of real close tie and real investment in it.
Awesome. Now, when people kind of go and see these collections, will they be getting the sense of those stories as well?
Yeah, I hope so. Didactically, we'll be doing a little bit of that. I'm really keen to try and sort of communicate as much of these relationships as possible the room sheet and the things that you'll be able to access at the exhibition. But I think, to me, just the relationships the works have to each other as well. They're often kind of all of a particular community, or that they have relationship to each other that I hope will be communicated. Mm-hmm. And we also have a public program on the 17th of March. It's a Saturday afternoon, which is the closing of that exhibition. So we'll have a drink and the collectors will be there to chat about their collections as well. So if you want the real inside scoop, that's the place to get it.
When you were curating this, did you kind of find an overlying theme across all the collections?
Yeah, it's just been the most fun show to curate, I must say. Firstly, the opportunity to kind of go into these people's homes mostly and sort of sort through, and, one sort of common thread was this amazing volume of work that people had But being artists and curators and this sort of thing, is they don't necessarily have the space to hang it. So, you know, you're kind of sifting through these works that are just, you know, piled around. I mean, carefully, of course, but, you know, just the accumulation of it. But beyond that, I mean, I think, you know, as I've said, it's the connection for me. These aren't people that just necessarily kind of go out and buy art like they're going shopping. You know, mostly there's some other relationship to the work, whether that's, you know, a sort of peer relationship with artists that are kind of in conversation with each other and, you know, exchange a lot in terms of dialogue and ideas and, you know, practical kind of medium tips and things. Abdul has a lot of, you know, some other kind of contemporary painters of his generation in his collection. And I think to sort of see the dialogue that happens there between artists and between curators and artists was a really strong thread.
Yeah. And when you kind of approach each collector, was it like, was the range of mediums kind of there as well?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's got a real diversity of things. I think, you know, when you start going into people's private collections, there is in some ways a certain sort of thread in terms of the majority of works you'll find usually being of a domestic scale, something that you can probably, you know, put on a wall or, you know, is not an enormous sculpture, you know, often... Mm. I mean, you know, the collectors that I'm working with live in houses like arts workers and, you know, artists and not these sort of glorious museum-style spaces.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, often the work as well reflects who they are. So, you know, Emma Price, for example, has this really incredible collection that's sort of filled with amazing, influential, queer, you know, kind of politically active artists like David McDermott and Keith Haring that sort of reflect, I think, who she is as an artist and her career and the trajectory that she's gone, which is, you know, along those lines in the Sydney scene very much.
Well, it sounds like an amazing exhibition. But Kate, thank you so much for talking to us here today on at 2SER.
Not a worry. Thanks for having me. And there's so much going on. I just hope, you know, everyone jumps online and checks out the program.
We will. And we'll put all those details up along with this podcast on at 2ser.com. But Kate, thanks again.
No worries. Thank you, Sophie.
That was Kate Britton, the artistic director of Art Month Sydney, giving you a bit of a peek into the annual Collector Space exhibition. We'll put all those details up where you can see it at Mayspace in Waterloo. I'm going to jump back into the music now. Here's a tune from Angie. It's called Down for the Count.
grounds for Golden Plains, the Lords of Scottish Rock, Mogwai, arrive in Sydney. Submit to their formidable live show with towering intensity and perfect crescendos at post-rock volumes. Sunday, March 4 at the Enmore Theatre. Tickets on sale now from Ticketek. Presented by Penny Drop, Langway Presents and Chug Entertainment, sponsoring 2SER.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie. Now, the company of Rogues Bedlam Cabaret is back for Mardi Gras to dazzle audience with some burlesque jewels, cabaret queens and Sydney's coolest and daring performance artists. Bedlam Cabaret Mardi Gras edition will be all sorts of marvellous madness, and creative producer Robbie James is in studio to give us a little sneak peek into the event. Good morning, Robbie.
Good morning, Sophie.
For people who don't know, what is the Company of Rogues?
Well, the Company of Rogues is a fairly new theatre company. We're based in the Inner West here in Sydney. It was founded in 2015 by our artistic director, Goldilla Raymond, originally to create and produce new Australian work. And since then, it's become a little bit more than that. And we've had a couple of different works. Last year, we went to the Edinburgh Fringe with a new play, which is how Bedlam began. Mm-hmm. And we're back with Bedlam for 2018 with a few new additions.
Ooh, what are these new additions?
Well, we had a little Christmas one last year, which was quite a lot of fun. But the Mardi Gras show is probably our biggest Bedlam yet. It's our third Bedlam, and it's the one I'm probably most proud of, I suppose, because the artists are so interesting and they're so dynamic. And we have another couple more coming up in the year. Each one will be a themed show.
So Mardi Gras themed is, what's the theme around?
Well, being the 40th anniversary, what we really wanted to do was go out and reach out to some of our favourite queer artists and allied artists, and that's exactly what we've done. So it's really about showcasing new and emerging artists alongside really established artists, but they're pretty much all queer or queer allied.
Excellent. Now, who are some of these artists?
Who are some of these artists?
Who are they?
We have, I've got a bit of a lineup. There are 9 artists in our show for this next one. We have comedian Debbie Zuckerman, who's from the Post-its and the Kvetch Set Collective. I'm glad I said that right. She's great. I would describe her as a nerdy comedian. There's the amazing Curly Fries, who some people will know from the theatre collective The Leftovers. Really well known for some really dynamic, interesting, sort of boundary-pushing work. I actually don't know what he'll be doing on stage. It's going to be quite a surprise. Yeah.
I love it when it's just like...
Me too.
Just like, we got them. We just don't know what they're doing.
Well, you know, we trust and we delight in some of our artists, and I am looking forward to the odd surprise or two. Why shouldn't we be surprised as well, right?
Totally.
We also have Malena Dali, really well-known from the Oyster Club, an incredible glamdrogynous drag thing, and some amazing boylesque stars, Ben Noir, who some people may know, and Prince Enigma, who's a former Mr. Boylesque Australia.
Ooh.
Yes. So
you have royalty.
We have a little bit of royalty. Royalty in the literal flesh, which is quite a lot of fun. And a great Berlin-based artist named Poppy Cox, who some people will know from the series Bike Smart, which has been touring Europe and is out here as well for Mardi Gras. She'll be on stage with her pervy Parisian puppets.
Pervy Parisian puppet.
Pervy Parisian puppet. Say that quickly.
Pervy Peruvian. Peruvian. Where did that come from? Pervy Parisian puppets.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that sounds amazing. But you're also working with James Brecker-Breckney.
Oh, yeah.
As well as Goodell Raymond. Can you tell us a bit more? How was it working with them?
Well, Goldilla, I met on a theatre project a couple of years ago when I had a corporate job. And it was a little while after that we bumped into each other studying the same course at the Sydney Opera House. We weren't quite sure if we were going to be working together, but then a little while after that, she was producing a play called Morgenstern and asked me to come by and see it. And ever since then, I found myself being a rogue.
Just like that?
Just like that. I was inspired by the work. I was inspired by Goldilla. She's got such great energy and such great vision for what she wants to do. And I just couldn't help but be swept up in that. And all of a sudden, I'm a creative producer and I've been there now almost probably a year.
Wow. That is quite an adventure.
It is a bit of an adventure, yeah.
Now, Brecker, he's a big personality.
He's a big personality. He's a great personality. He's got a lot of things going on in the next week.
I bet. I feel like with him and Mardi Gras, it's just like everything, every day.
Well, he is getting married on a float during Mardi Gras.
Oh, my. Seriously?
Seriously.
He had to organise a wedding on top of that.
He's organised on top of everything else he's doing, including hosting our amazing show. Yeah. He will be getting married on a float during the Mardi Gras parade. It's a very exciting time for him, but yeah, pinning him down can be a bit difficult.
I bet. But he's on hosting duties.
Big, bold and brash as always.
Excellent. Do you know what jacket he's going to be wearing this time?
I don't, but he let slip that it may be something to do with rainbows and leopards.
Ooh.
Mm.
Ooh. I swear, he's got one of the greatest jacket collections.
I'd love to get a peek into that wardrobe.
Right. Now, Gadella mentioned that the Sydney cabaret scene is very genre-specific. What are your thoughts on that?
I wish I could get out to see more cabaret than I do, but I do agree with Goldilocks. A lot of the time you go to a cabaret in Sydney and they are quite genre-specific, whether they're just a basic, what we like to call a titty twirler burlesque show, or something that's a little more kind of really just circus with a bit of vocal or something like that. We like the idea of having an old-school variety show. So this is vaudeville with a contemporary queer twist.
Do you feel like you're starting to get a bit more of that now, especially with like Sydney Festival? We saw a few of those variety vaudeville shows coming through.
Yeah, and there's all degrees too. I mean, things like Limbo, you've got these great big productions, and they're big and they're beautiful and they're amazing. Being able to go and see something where you're tapping into your local artists, it's a little more raw. Sometimes it's a little bit surprising. You don't always know if you're going to like everything. Don't always know if you're going to love everything either. I find that to be a little more exciting than going to something where I'm guaranteed a particular kind of performance.
Yeah. And it's all happening down at the Red Rattler.
Yeah.
It's a very intimate space.
It's one of our favourite venues. It's so much fun. I wish we had 10 more Rattlers in Sydney. They really make it possible for shows like this to happen on a regular basis.
Yeah. So how intimate is the audience going to get within the Rattler space?
Well, you're only ever about 10 metres from the stage in the Rattler, so you'll be able to see the whites of their eyes and everything else, I'd imagine.
Excellent. Well, Robbie, we can't wait to see it all go down, all the bedlam.
All the madness, absolutely.
But thank you so much for joining us here. We can't wait to go down and see it.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Not a problem. That's co-curator and creative producer Robbie James chatting about Bedlam Cabaret Mardi Gras edition, which should be on Wednesday the 28th of February in Maverill at the Red Rattler. We'll put all those details up on 2sit.com, and you can also check it out on companyofrogues.com. Going to jump back into the music now. Here's a tune from Gang of Youths. This one is The Diving Bell.
Come close to the eye that I might only see you. Here from my side of the water, my blue screen blues. If there's a path headed out to the bright lights and a myriad sways, and no dice for the radio silence and our pirated waves. And I'm a far and away now vagrant. I'm drifted off coast, settled into a concrete rhythm deep. In the hands of a foreign danger, and in the enemy's fight, as close as you've come to living in a long, long time. But I dream the voices, they are calling out to you. Come alive, come alive in the fire. Giving up the night sunset. Come and dance by the armored soldiers for the menace of peace. Come and stand by the ghetto blasters playing fuck the police. In a way, we're a lot like strangers at the end of our world. And in a way, this lonesome chasm is just holding close. If there's a fight in the bed and cages for the rest of our time. Come alive, cause you never know when something is right. Avert your eyes for it, and let it be true. Avert your eyes if we'll be right back.
doubt or hope for more. But I know you'll never down, never leave you in the gutter. No, you'll never down, never leave you.
Libraries, archives, museums. Glam City, 2SER's new series, gives you the latest on Sydney's events and exhibitions. Join historians Tamsin Peach and Anna Clark to find out what's going on in Sydney's cultural scene. Listen live Mondays at 7 p.m. or download Glam City on your podcast app today. Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
It's about 1 minute to midday, so which means my time here is a big thanks to all our guests today. If you missed anything from the show, just head along to 2SER.com to our beautiful website, and you can catch all our chats there. If you want to listen to the extended version of Gaggle of Geeks, just look us up on any good podcast player. 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks with Sophie Lai and Blake Howard. There we are. My name is Sophie. Till next week with more arts and culture. Bye.
From 2SER and the Urban Housing Lab at the University of Sydney comes City Road. Informed stories about cities and urban life. What happens when an algorithm becomes your landlord? How does gentrification change the face and culture of our cities? What are smart cities? City Road will ponder these questions and much more. Subscribe to City Road wherever you get your podcasts or find us on cityroadpod.org.